This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
This is Dennis Keithley, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Idiot's Array, the ninth episode in Season 1, featuring the return of Lando Calrissian. Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is Dennis Keithley. Dennis is a lifelong Star Wars fan and a regular listener. We are honored to have him join us for a cup of coffee. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on. You've always been such a wonderful supporter of our show and listener, and just have a lot of fun things to say when it comes to Star Wars. So this seems like a natural fit for us, I would say. And we'll just start with you, Dennis. What is your overall opinion of Idiot's Array?
I thought it was a fun show. I think it was a little bit lacking in the overall direction, adding any type of direction to the series, but it was good to see the entire crew have a more active role. I didn't feel like anyone really got shunted to the side as much as in past episodes.
Very good. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, you'd watched the episode before me, and you usually type up kind of our notes along the way, and you shoot me an email. And I didn't know the title of the episode yet, but all I saw was Idiot's Array come across my email from you, and I was like, hey, now, come on. So I thought you were trying to poke fun at me. But anyway, I agree with you, Dennis, that it was lacking in some areas overall. I think it was a lot of fun to see returning characters, classic characters, as we see Lando here. And yeah, it was a little bit different than some of the other episodes, and it seems like it was a little bit of a derailment from the kind of the center line of the main focus storyline that been carrying through the first part of the second half of this season.
Sure. Well, once again, through the wonderful power of discussion, we have some similar yet different perspectives on this, and this is wonderful. This is what it's all about to me. And I agree for the most part. But there's one critical element to this episode which makes it more poignant to me, and it actually has nothing to do with our overall rogue smuggler's return. But we'll get to that. So we start off with a game of Sabacc, and I thought that was really cool. Sabacc is, of course, a legendary game in the Star Wars universe. And, of course, Han famously is playing Sabacc with Lando and wins the Falcon. And so we get to see what it's like. And I think it's interesting... while they're playing, Chopper is wagered by Zeb, and Zeb says, Kanan says, what are you crazy? And he shows him his cards and says, oh, look, I can't lose, which, by the way, P.S., I'm pretty sure if you show your card to somebody while you're playing, that's a no-no. I mean, I didn't grow up in the Old West, but come on. But that's okay. It was fun. And so Lando, you know, reveals himself. It's this great reveal. He has a very unique look about him. He got the mustache going. And... he wins Sabacc with a hand that's called Idiot's Array. So, guys, is this humor? Is this symbolism? What's going on here?
Well, I think it's part humor. I also think it could be a metaphor for Ezra, Zeb, and Chopper, because they are the local Three Stooges for the show.
Yes.
I thought it was a good callback just to the legendary game. We all know, especially from the legends, that that's how Han won the ship.
Right.
And it was extremely fortuitous that Lando happened to end up in that bar.
Well, it also looks like, I mean, I think it would be really fun if West End Games or someone put out a version of Sabacc so you could actually play it. Imagine everyone at Celebration Anaheim playing Sabacc, which I'm sure there probably will be. But to have those cards like that, the gold, it sort of felt like Gin Rummy to me. And Corey, your response was interesting when you saw the title, Idiot's Array. How do you perceive that? That's a very odd thing to name a hand.
Well, you know, I equate it to poker terms in a sense.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I saw it. It was kind of like a best handheld, pair against pair. I don't know if it's a two-man matchup or if it's a group game.
But why call it Idiot's Array? I mean, in poker, if you're beating somebody with an unbeatable hand, you don't say, you're a sucker, you're a punk, here you go.
I think as far as like the symbolism or the humor, I think it is kind of a hand, like a hand you hold. I'm trying to think of some poker hands that you would hold, Royal Flush or Ace High.
Full House,
sure, stuff like that. So it was kind of like a read and weep type thing. It was like saying, you know, I've got you here, and this is the hand you just happen to be holding.
Right. And you're all idiots for falling for it.
Apparently, yeah. So I think that's...
Like Dennis said.
That's more of
a humor. Well, it's also it was a 0, 2, and a 3, I think, were the cards or something like that, which you're not exactly going for a 3 of a kind or anything like that. I'd collection of cards to try and collect.
Maybe it's like golf and you kind of have to let the lowest number.
It could be. Well, I mean, on Rebels Recon, when they interviewed Pablo about this, he said, you know, there's a very full set of rules that, of course, he and Leland Shi know about. So that's kind of cool. I hope to pick Pablo's brain about that someday. That would be fun. So this planet has an unusually large Imperial presence, Lando says. But I guess before I get into some of the things that Lando says and how he acts, how do you both feel about Lando being back? And not only that, but what is the purpose of this? Does he need to be in this story?
Well, that was actually one of my concerns, is that we've had, 10 episodes of this show, and we've had a whole lot of classic characters, from Darth Vader to Obi-Wan, Yoda, Bail, C-3PO, R2-D2. And so it's almost a guest appearance of the week type of situation. That aside, I guess I didn't mind seeing him. It was a fun distraction from the main storyline. But really, the whole... we need to smuggle in something here was kind of a MacGuffin, really just to kind of have him appear in a show.
Corey, what about you?
I agree. And I felt it was a little jarring for me because it was the last few episodes were so powerful as far as the, the main storyline and then getting to know the characters. And now all of a sudden we have a classic character coming back to, kind of shift his weight around a little bit and not necessarily have to have a huge sprawling episode and kind of they can kind of sit back and relax a little bit and let Lando kind of carry the weight, if you will. I felt that was kind of like you said in the R2-D2's episode and kind of have them kind of carry the giant weight as far as exposure to the episode itself.
So you don't have a problem with Lando coming back?
No, it wasn't too bad, but I hope. And I'm sure we'll talk about it by the end, that I hope that he see a broader spectrum of how he kind of interlays into the storyline.
Well, what I think is kind of unique about this is there's a risk. We saw some of this in the Clone Wars, even though I don't think it really happened too badly at all, especially after season 1. I think it was much cleaner. I think Star Wars doesn't need gimmicks. Sometimes when you throw in a callback or a flashback, I mean, the musical cues... are nice. And Kevin Kiner even said in Star Wars Insider through Amy Radcliffe's interview that if he would have probably been annoyed if when he made Clone Wars that they made him do a lot of callbacks to John Williams' music because he wanted to try to get his own feel for it. And now he gets to throw it in and balance it and play with it. And he's enjoying it. And I enjoyed Lando's appearance. I was a little trepidatious. I didn't love it. I've always liked Lando. I know there's a huge... array of people who love him, especially because of all the fun things that Rebel Force Radio has done with the Ability Quote of the Week. And that's hard not to love. I mean, whenever my wife texts me, I have the ringtone of, well, who, you know, what is it? Well, who, hello, editing. what do we have here? That's my text message whenever my wife texts me because it makes me smile. Lando's smooth. So, and I liked having Vader and Yoda and R2 and 3PO back, and I think there needs to be some commingling. So it didn't bother me too much. I think the different things could have happened to advance it, perhaps. So I guess we should just get into what Lando is like as a character in this. He comments that the planet has an unusually large Imperial presence, which I think is a rather prescient comment. It shows us that Lothal does have something unique about it. And I think we already have a pretty good idea what that is. And there are two Jedi there, although I think that might be kind of coincidental. So there's clearly more that Lothal is going to offer. But Lando, right off the bat, which Hera brings up later in the episode, a lot of divide and conquer. He walks on the ship. They don't know who he is. And he says, I assume Kanan requires your approval. And Hera is completely unflappable. She says, he doesn't. Doesn't even bother one bit that Lando's trying to play the sexual politics or the gender issue there, which I think says a lot about Hera and her strength. And how do you feel about it as far as Lando goes?
Now, I'll jump in real fast. It seems throughout this episode, Lando kind of wines and dines everybody on the ship except for Hera. She seems to see right through him.
He
tries multiple times, I think, and mm-hmm. she sees right through him. And I just equate that to her personality and her character. And it seems like she's kind of run into these folks, these characters before, where she's not kind of taken their garbage. And I think that he himself, I think, is kind of coming into his own as a character in this episode. He's not the Lando we see in Empire.
Right.
He's still kind of smooth talking his way into position. Yet he's got a keen mind where he wants to go. So, he definitely is kind of playing that route. And as he interacts with more of the characters, we kind of get to see where his strengths are and where his weaknesses is. And obviously Hera is not keen to it. So,
but I love how she shows that it doesn't bother. I mean, mm-hmm. the biggest way you can diffuse a situation is either to not respond or to just not let it bother you. And she is as cool as the other side of the pillow.
I agree. I thought it was great to see how Lando quickly picked up on the best way to get under everyone's skin, or at least with Ezra and Kanan.
Right.
He figured out quickly that Kanan has an attachment to Hera and exploited that by our captain. We were fortunate to have her. And then praising Sabine and her art in a way that Ezra never could. And then kind of talking down to them, you know, explaining what the definition of connoisseur and what the definition of entrepreneur was to them. And so he got them on edge and then made them defensive, but at the same time spent a great deal of time flattering Chopper and Sabine. So he did a great job. And I did speak a lot to Hera's strength and her looking out for the crew. This was a good episode for her.
Yeah, and actually I'll just jump ahead a little bit. The reason I like this episode as much as I do is because I feel like I finally got more of a Hera-centered episode, which I've been clamoring for if you count the Spark of Rebellion, this will be the 10th episode, although this is the 9th if you don't count that. I think this is what we got. And we'll jump into that much more in more detail later. So let's talk about Lando and wordplay. Entrepreneur and connoisseur, words that rhyme. Words that he feels the need to try to explain to people. And Kanan is like, yeah, I know what it means. And then the other guys say, no, what is it? What does that word mean? But they don't want to let it. How do you feel about that? I mean, to me, of course, as a teacher of language, when I hear that, I think, oh my gosh, is that pedantic? How arrogant is that? Does he really think that they don't know the word? But as you both said, he knows how to get under their skin, but he does it with a slice of sweetness, with a slice of charm that makes him not so much self-effacing, but charismatic. So how much they fall into that, I don't know, but I mean, they don't kick him off the ship and they still buy into what he's doing. But did that bother you guys, the wordplay thing?
It seemed like a classic strategy to deflect attention from his goal to from what he's trying to achieve. He found a good receptive target when Sabine. She has been dying for someone to notice her art for the right reasons. And, throws it in Ezra's face. Well, you don't know why it's good or what the, mm-hmm. or what my influences were. But that does get under my skin when I'm talked down to that way. And I can only imagine, you know, Kanan is a little insecure as a new Jedi Master, and he's trying to lead this team alongside Hera. And then Ezra has always been fighting for respect. And now we have someone here preying on all of his fears. He's only a child. He doesn't know what this means. He can't appreciate the way I can.
Right. Yeah, it's a very unique strategy. If you're going to condescend to someone to make it appear that they don't understand sophisticated words and language to distract from you, it almost seems like you'd make yourself more of a target. But that doesn't happen, which I find unique. Lando is so uncanny with his abilities that it's no wonder he achieves the success later in Star Wars that he actually does.
Yeah, I kind of felt that he kind of, if he was at a party, he kind of seems like he gets around the room a little bit. Kind of, you know, like you said, you know, bends everyone to his will a little bit. I mean, I also think he's still kind of testing out his skills and fine-tuning them a little bit. And then this episode also, I kind of realized that the crew themselves are broke. I mean, they're running, seems like, from on fumes to fumes, job to job, and take whatever they can get. And all of a sudden, this guy kind of says, hey, I'll kind of, you know, take you underneath my wing a little bit and give you a job and give you some support. And by the way, you know, I'm kind of, you know, running my own gig here. And it seems like he's testing their skills as a crew and seeing what they're like. So it's information for him to be able to put them in, you know, his Rolodex of folks that he could get in contact with. So he's always building these relationships, I think.
Yeah, his network.
So it's definitely to his advantage.
Well, so we get to the heart of the matter. The reason he's been hired is he's going to transport a cargo. And Hera plays a very, very large role in that. So they go on to the ship of a very unusually looking creature. His name is Asmorgan. So they go onto the ship, and as it's going along, Lando points out escape pods. And we learn later this is sort of a code that he's trying to tell everybody. Hera's the only one who picks up on it. I certainly didn't pick up on it. So it's a good thing I wasn't involved in the ship or I'd be trapped. Although I'm sure that Asmorgan wouldn't want me. Boy, did that get weird. Okay, so what happens, Hera shines. I mean, she just shines. She plays along. She figures out Lando's tricks. Lando offers her as a trade, and she kind of looks at him like, what? But she just acquiesces completely, very gracefully. And I think it was interesting how Asmorgan described her outfit. I think he described it as ridiculous, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Or preposterous.
Preposterous,
yeah.
Yeah, so, but he still says, all right, we'll take her. And so Kanan's not happy, but he still goes along with it. So he just trusts, or he kind of trusts blindly, really. So then Lando's defenses, Hera strikes me as very capable. We were lucky to have her as captain. And the word we, I thought, was very interesting. Guys, what'd you make of this entire little scene here?
It was, you know, it threw me off a little bit because I expect Lando to have a little of a plan, but I didn't expect him to give Hera away like that. And I the way it was kind of, you know, it reminded me of kind of like the, I don't know, Roman times or Egyptian times, something like that, and just giving someone away because you can't pay a debt or because you're in service for someone else. And here's a slave or here's someone that will, you know, be my payment. And I thought, you know, it's very unique when you see those situations because you instantly think, oh, it's a lower life form. It's a lower being. It's a slave. It's somebody who can't, you know, has to work the low jobs or do whatnot. And I felt Hera was not that at all, if anything. You know, it's obviously she was totally out of her element in that position and she was taken caught off guard. But like you said, she shines as far as living in that moment and playing it off. He says, you know, just go with everything I say kind of type thing, like roll the punches. And she certainly does. And Kanan's even thrown off a little bit, like, what do I do? And He seems like he doesn't know what to do, and I don't know. I thought it was a little weird that just that interaction between the characters there, because it just was weird, I think, for me to see Hera in that position and kind of have to, I don't know, lower herself down to that level.
But she completely doesn't. She just
She doesn't. Yeah. She plays it off. Obviously, it's a play. Right. But
I knew you were well on top of things.
Yeah,
But she She's very slick. I love the whole scene with the tray where she tricks Es Morgan to dine alone. She knows that she's a beautiful, powerful woman, and she is just very savvy with who she is as a person, which is so wonderful and refreshing. The guard is walking, bang, knocks him out. That was a really useful tray,
yeah.
Which made our last guest, Tom's daughter, laughed out loud at that because it was funny. And then she jumps in the escape pod, makes everything look so easy. She's completely in control. Dennis, what do you think about all this?
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the whole episode.
Yeah, me too.
Was seeing her shine. And then she emerges from the escape pod and punches Lando right in the gut.
Yes.
Okay, I deserve that. That was great. She got to be tough. She got to do more than stay behind on the ship. I don't have a problem with that because she's the captain. She's the pilot. She knows that ship better than anybody. But she really got to show her diversity of her skills. And I also appreciated when she was talking to Es Morgan that while she played up the docile servant role, she didn't lay it. I mean, that could have been a
disaster.
Disaster of a scene. And I thought that it was handled appropriately.
She didn't even let herself fall into that, which, and who knows what would have happened, but she was so much in control of it. And yeah, she's a strong female character. And that's a term that's used very often when talking about Star Wars, when talking about anything in fiction, really. Why is she a strong character?
I think she's proven it all along. I mean, she's in control. She's definitely knows what's going on the entire time on pretty much every mission. She runs every mission. She, you know, has the plan, it seems like. Everybody kind of looks to her to be, what are we going to do next, or how are we going to get out of the situation? And she seems to have a plan. She knows what's going on. She's very capable. And in this episode, like we talked about, and you know, even if she's caught off guard by Lando's little play, she definitely works it to her advantage. And one comment I'd like to make about that scene where you guys talked about her kind of getting Es Morgan by himself. My kids watched the episode as well, and instantly my oldest boy, Wesley, he said, "Wait a minute, is that like a Jedi mind trick?" And I was like, "That's interesting." I mean, I didn't see it that way, but he brought it up, and
right, that was kind of a mind trick.
It's a Hera mind trick. So she's definitely got some definite skills. So yes, she's an incredible character.
Did you notice when they're taking the cargo away and moving it back towards the ghost? Did you notice the music?
I can't think of it.
It's the music from Cloud City when they're moving Han and Carbonite.
Oh, nice.
I thought that was this like little homage. So we're happy with Hera. She, I think, redeems this episode and impacts the grade I'm going to give it later. Let's talk about the cargo itself. A puffer pig, an emplacement, right? And, of course, which will naturally be a fan favorite, and because it's fun, it's cute. It inflates when it's frightened.
Yeah, I guess what I'd say about the pig, though, is that, again, you know, I made reference to that MacGuffin earlier, and on some levels, this scheme didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I guess Lando just must not have a ship, or why he felt he had to get a special ship to get this pig that can't be detected by the Imperials anyway to Lothal. You know, it was fine. The pig was cute. It was funny. My kids laughed hysterically when we watched it yesterday morning. You know, there's some great lines between Ezra and Zeb regarding the pig. But again, it's just kind of a, you know, it was the MacGuffin to get them all together and have an adventure.
I do think it was cool, though, that the Empire can't detect something that's organic, which shows, again, their emphasis on the artificial versus the natural humanity of things and the power of an organism versus a machine. So I thought that was pretty neat.
That's a good point.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think the puffer pig was a little bit just of a comedy reaction. It's almost like it's, yeah, you think, talk about the Three Stooges earlier, and it puts that terms where it's, you know, kind of like you want just background music and them just running on fast, like trying to figure out what to do. And they make do. And you see, also, they also show, you know, it's, you know, how incapable the crew is without Hera on the lead, like I talked about earlier, where she is just, she's got everything ready to go, and she knows every inch of that ship, and can kind of get everything organized, and that you see them screw up. We talked about Lando earlier about how he pushes everybody's buttons there, but maybe he's trying to teach them something even greater.
Well, I think you're giving Lando more credit than he deserves.
Maybe, I don't know.
But who knows? He does seem, he's wise, but he's like street smart wise.
That's true. That's a good point.
Which is what we expect.
Well, he's still coming into his own,
right,
too.
Right.
And, you know, he may or may not have had money, and he came up with a convoluted scheme to get a pig to the planet.
Right.
But he was great at manipulating everybody.
Well, I thought it was pretty fun. Once they're on the run and the code doesn't work because, of course, Zeb, again, the honor guard, clumsily falls into the ship and ruins the controls, and now the Empire can see the ship. So then they go and they hide into the clouds, which I thought was a nice foreshadowing to Cloud City.
Yeah. And the artwork there real quick is incredible. Just looks like a watercolor painting or something. It's just the artwork is wonderful.
Gorgeous.
The way it is put together.
I agree. Well,
I was going to say that whole escape from the blockade screamed classic trilogy to me.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. You know, even if there was a pig sitting in the cockpit, but yeah. it was a lot of fun.
Right. Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think there's probably something interesting about inflating when you're frightened, which of course comes from the natural world, real puffer fish. But I like the idea of fear inflates everything, makes it seem worse than it actually is, because the pig is just an innocent animal. It's got a nose for precious minerals, which is why Lando wants it, and the Empire doesn't want private mining done on Lothal, which is because, of course, they won't get any money out of it and be able to take the resources from the planet and the people. Hera does something really cool here. It's when she kind of puts a line in the sand and says, listen, enough of the divide and conquer to get what you want. My crew works together as a team. Again, that emphasis on team and family and unity. She sees through it all the time. She lets it play through to see what's going to happen because she uses it to her advantage. But we mentioned before what makes a strong character. Hera allows life to be. She has a vision. She has a dream. She has a mission. She's vulnerable. She's strong. She's savvy. She's the character that we've been waiting for a long time. Easily the strongest female character since Ahsoka. And I grant you, a lot has not come out since the Clone Wars to make that happen. But this is the kind of character that if you have a daughter, this is who you want her to emulate, I would think. Don't you guys?
Yeah, I agree.
I think so. Yeah.
I just like the fact that she lets her crew members be the crew. They're be themselves. Right. And she brings out the best of them. She, you know, she got Ezra to charge back into the Imperial ship back in Spark of Rebellion. And, you know, she's got Sabine to trust her. And I can't remember the name of that episode with the Fear-Nox. But right. She, you know, and she knows how to motivate Kanan. And she doesn't try and forcefully change them, but she encourages them. She knows how to gently press those buttons, but at the same time, not really changing who they are.
Well, yeah, she's not didactic. She's not preachy. When she's giving a lesson, you don't feel like it's an Andy Griffith moment where they're walking around the pond trying to explain things, and she's very stern. She does it very naturally. I mean, the term mother has been used quite a bit, which it's hard to think of the name Hera without thinking of mother anyway, just back to old ancient mythology. But she's just very clever, and I'm glad to see her get more of a spotlight here, because I guess maybe in a way we're seeing why she doesn't get more of the spotlight, because she handles so much. Some of the other characters won't grow. I think a lot of Hera's growth, while there's probably more that can be done, a lot of it has happened before this show even started. We saw this in A New Dawn, John Jackson Miller's book. So very, very refreshing. We get to the fight as Morgan comes back. Real quickly, Corey, I'm interested. What did you think of the design of Ez Morgan? I mentioned earlier that he was a very odd-looking creature. Tell me what you thought of him.
Yeah, we talked about the whole thing kind of being a MacGuffin, kind of a, you know, been there, done that type feel to it. And, you know, it seems like these dumb underling type rulers that are kind of overweight, they're sloppy, they're dim-witted. It was a classic setup. I mean, obviously he's going to show back up, and I'm surprised how fast he moved a couple times during the fight. his design was cool. The voice work was really great. I don't know who did the voice for the character. It was cool.
Oh,
James Hung.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. But his design was a little bit familiar, a little bit too familiar. Jabba the Hutt comes to mind a little bit. I mean, are they trying to play that a little bit? Maybe. I think so.
I think so. Yeah. The drooling alone.
Yes. <That's... laughs> he reminded me of the Puffa Pig, yeah.
But I actually think that the background material at theclonestarwars.com said that was from an earlier concept of Jabba. I may be misremembering the source. So.
No, I think you're right on. Yes, very good. One of the perks, too, usually we tape these before all the notes are from StarWars.com, but we've been a little negligent since the second half of season one came out, as I'm sure everyone has noticed. So we apologize for that, but it has only increased the knowledge in the conversation. So Dennis, I appreciate you bringing that up, because these inspirations that keep being drawn from the history of behind the scenes of Star Wars that are put into the series are one of the things that it's almost like an Easter egg for the insightful fan. So I think that's pretty cool. We get the big battle at the end. Ezra gets to use his lightsaber for the first time in battle, but he doesn't use the actual blade. He uses it as a weapon. And again, this lightsaber makes the coolest noises. The blaster fires was pretty cool. We see how accurate and commanding Lando is in a fight, whether he may be charming and be able to sort of trick you with his charms. There's no trickery involved when it comes to a fight. He's right on the money with every shot. If he was a stormtrooper, the rebellion wouldn't last very long. And then we see Sabine do a Spider-Man impression.
Yeah.
Jumping around.
Without her jetpack or.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised at that.
So we still have yet to see a Sabine featured episode, but that should be fun too. You notice that when the battle's all said and done, Hera is the only one who actually defends Lando. And then Chopper saves the day with the guns on the ghost. And that's not the only way he saves the day either. Let's talk about this battle, guys. What stood out to you?
Well, I did love the fact that Chopper runs off behind that fuel cell and Sabine, calls out, Chopper, not there. That's the worst possible place you could be. And so that started that whole maneuver of his to steal the fuel. But I just could not buy, as Morrigan, as Corey suggested, getting the drop on Zeb. You saw that Zeb kind of turn around and get distracted, and as Morrigan kind of snuck across the screen, was like, he's not that fast. But other than that, I enjoyed the moments, some of the moments in the battle. I loved it when, after Ezra had taken a shot with his saber, Kanan said, dryly, "Oh, mine can't do that," as a callback to an earlier episode. But it was a fun conclusion to the episode for me.
Yeah, for me, that little quip that Kanan makes about the lightsaber might doesn't do that. I thought that was a little childish of him to. Kind of, I don't know if he was just kind of giving props to Ezra, which maybe that's the case. I talked myself out of my own comment, but I guess.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah,
that's part of Kanan's charm.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah, I take that back.
So Lando doesn't pay his debt initially, it seems. He owes Hera and the crew, which at the end he promises he'll see Chopper again. So, and I, at this the time of this recording, I have no idea. I don't think anyone really does as far as if Lando Calrissian will be coming back. We don't know how much Billy Dee Williams recorded in his session. I know that I hope the same as I'm sure a lot of us do, that when all these amazing actors come back, James Earl Jones and Frank Oz and Billy Dee, you hope that they recorded a lot of scripts so that they can be used throughout the first couple seasons, and time will tell on that. One thing I do want to point out, not only does Chopper cleverly take that fuel cell and man the guns and save them, Hera says some really unique last-minute advice. She says, there are a lot of things we couldn't accomplish without him. You should appreciate that more. And it wasn't you should appreciate him more. You should appreciate that more. Acknowledging not necessarily the individual or the entity that's doing something that's beneficial, but the notion of teamwork and how much we accomplish when we are together. Mm-hmm. I find that very insightful in regards to Kanan especially.
It was a good theme for the episode, dating back to her earlier comment to Lando's that we work best as a team. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was a good conclusion.
Yeah, it's almost like she kind of reinstates, obviously, her position in the crew and kind of reminds everybody, says, you know, we do a lot and, you know, we need to pick each other up. And instead of, it seems like sometimes they argue a lot too, just getting to know each other as a crew. And she kind of reminds them, so, you know, we should appreciate each other more as a crew, and look how well we work together.
Yeah.
Even with Lando's help here. So, yeah.
And you get the sense very much like Kanan already knows that, but it's just, it's a nice reminder. I mean, let's be honest. Kanan came from the Ultimate Team. He came from the Jedi Order. He witnessed Order 66, one of the few younglings to actually survive it, although I'm sure he was technically a Padawan. I don't know if he was a youngling at the time. We'll find out in April with Craig Weissman's comic book series. But it's just some really unique things. And then Ezra says to Sabine, I always appreciated you, Sabine. She replies, yeah, I know. Like, please.
Yeah. You know, real quick, I'll make a comment on that. I thought that was – it needed more there. I don't know if she was shrugging him off or was kind of giving us a little hint of I know. But I felt like she could have said something more or worded it differently and given him a little bit of a – you know, a little bit of a hope as far as their friendship or their romantic interests or whatever. I mean,
it's certainly a one-sided romantic interest.
Yeah, I think so. But
plus, there's a significant age difference as far as where she is and where he is. I mean, he's what, 12, 13, turned 13 in Empire Day?
That's right.
And she's 15 or 16. The difference between 13 and 15 is, it may as well be 30 years, quite honestly.
Well, it's true, but, you know, look at, yeah, Anakin and Padme.
True, and that worked out so well. No, I know what you're saying. I think that's this right on cue. I mean, she clearly I'm glad that they've been giving us this throughout the series without throwing it in our faces. We know that he's got a bit of a crush on her, which makes sense because, I mean, they're in a very small contained unit and she's older and he finds her attractive, but she's like, you know what? I'm not really interested in that. This is one of the reasons why I think this show is so wonderful and so successful, because you have female characters, multiple female characters who are strong and powerful, and you're drawn to them, but they're not strong and powerful because of their relationships romantically, but because of who they are and what their missions are. And I think that elevates Sabine and Hera to a level that we didn't necessarily see in some other incarnations of Star Wars.
The other thing I thought about this little back and forth between Ezra and Sabine is, you know, he says, I always appreciate you, Sabine. And she says, yeah, I know. It reminds me of the Han and Leia.
Yeah.
I love you, I know. I don't know if that's a takeoff of that or just,
oh, I'm
just
sure.
Way it's written.
That's a good point. I also drew some similarities between this and the ending of The Path of the Jedi, where they're all sitting around anxious to see what Ezra's done with his saber. Mm-hmm. There's this real family moment. You know, we know he's been working on it for weeks, and now they've had this stranger kind of come in and stay a little too long. And so now it's kind of, you know, they're getting back to, you know, Hera's reminded them that who they are, that they're a team, that they're a family. You know, Ezra's come up and said, yeah, I've always appreciated you. I got the total big sister vibe, which was, yeah, I know that, little brother.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess the other thing I'd say there is, you know, with Kanan, he was a very, he has a lot of room to go as a Jedi. And I think this episode highlighted that quite a bit. And Hera really reminded him of that, especially with those comments you're making, Dan, about, you know, you need to appreciate him more. I only imagine if someone like Obi-Wan was on this adventure, how he would have been a little bit more easygoing and not so ready to fire from the hip with a lot of the developments and not let Lando get under his skin and kind of jeopardize the mission and fragment the family.
You say he would have been more easygoing or would have been more direct?
I think Obi-Wan would have just rolled with the punches.
Yeah, I think so too. Although I think he would have probably not been as shy shy is definitely the wrong word for this episode, but I think eventually when push came to shove, he would have shoved pretty intensely, not with violence, but just with wisdom. But he let's be honest, he has a very different approach to teaching. I mean, in the Clone Wars, I think it was a little bit better, but in the films, it was much more of a finger wagger, I would say, which Hera doesn't do. Neither does Kanan. Well, Kanan does a little bit, But it's more out of an empathy than hey, you better adhere to this doctrine.
This is true. It's just again, Kanan just struck me as very, un-Jedi-like when he kept losing his cool. Now, again, he got
true.
He was thrown out, with Order 66 all those years ago, and thrust into a situation where he hadn't had an opportunity to have a mentor that could help him overcome these issues. And he is, he's got a strong attachment to Hera, which, as we discussed, got exploited. I like the way that Hera brought him back into this fold, back into this family, and they all kind of got a chance to realize what Chopper's worth was to the team, and how they all rely on each other.
Right. Good point. Corey, what about you? Anything more on that, or should we move on to the next little section?
Moving on.
Let's move on. All right. So, Lando, they think they've tricked Lando into not paying his debt and that he owes them. But what he says later is, look, of course I knew they took the fuel. That's why I didn't pay them. A gambler never shows his cards. And at this point, there's so much Billy Dee in this incarnation of Lando that's almost like Billy Dee himself. The persona of Billy Dee Williams is kind of winking at the camera. Did you both get that feeling?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's funny because he says a gambler never shows his cards, which Zeb did in the beginning of the episode to Kanan.
Good point.
So yeah. it's a callback to that, obviously. And so it's interesting because they actually even mentioned it earlier in the episode that asked him if he cheated, or I think somebody brought it up. Is that right? I think. If Lando had cheated,
yeah, they kind of postulate on if that may have in fact happened,
which maybe he did, maybe he did. I don't know.
Seems reasonable. Yeah,
but like you said, he doesn't show all his cards, so he's got tricks up his sleeve. And like you said, I don't think we've seen the last of him here. They definitely left on a good note and a high note. We'll definitely see Lando in a future episode.
So before we wrap up our last minute thoughts, how do you both feel? This Lando matched up to the Lando that we know from The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
I think it is a good introductory Lando. It especially highlights that when we get to The Empire Strikes Back and Han makes the comments of, look at you, all respectable now, that this is what he was talking about. We've graduated from the schemer to an administrator.
Right. I agree. I think it's very much on par with we sort of speculate on what he may have been like. And I don't know about you. I never read the Lando Expanded Universe Legends books. I, of course, read a number of them that have him in there, but it's after his experiences in Return of the Jedi. So I never really gave him a lot of thought as a character as far as his background, besides what was just sort of thrown about as legend during the time of the films when they came out in the 80s. But this is, as Dennis said, a really nice introduction. You can see what kind of skills he has and where that's going to lead him. But you also see that there's a lot of growth that needs to happen for him to be the rebel leader that eventually blows up the second Death Star. Corey, what about you? How do you feel about Lando? Yes.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely coming to his own here. Billy Dee, his voice work is definitely spot on. He did a great job of voicing a younger Lando. I was kind of curious about how he would do that, but he did a great job of kind of working his way in there and keeping the charm. And like you said, he's working on his charm, he's working on his play, and he's obviously, you can see he's going places. But like we said earlier too, he seems he's lacking on some spots. He's missing a ship. He's got this land that somehow he bought this land to mine and search for minerals and things. And so it's almost like he has everything going for him, but he needs to figure out what he wants to do. So he's still kind of skirting by to get by. But and the Lando we see in Return of the Jedi has obviously gone head and shoulders above this young man here, and he is doing great things. So, but I also think he still has the heart of gold and looks out for the little guy. So that really shone through, I think, in this episode as well.
See, really, a heart of gold, really.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see that in.
Does he have a heart of gold, or is he just he's happy to help others as long as it helps him first?
No, a heart of gold. I think in Return of the Jedi, he definitely comes into his own.
He does. Yeah,
once and there, but I think that's always been there. It's underneath his skin a little bit, as far as
his roguish exterior.
Yeah, sure. I mean, his you know, sparkling smile and demeanor, and so I think he's definitely has a good heart, and he's looking to do good. So,
and when you saw his facial hair, did you think, and like, I must ask you a question, but I'll shave it for later? Did you think? I can't believe it took that long for us to use a facial
to
hair
get there, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, it's definitely coming. Yeah, he had the slick back hair, kind of, and the animation was pretty good.
It really looked like Billy
Dee Williams. It looked like him, and even like the squinty eye and the hat, you know, the way he sat in a chair was kind of cocked to the side and kind of, you know, just kind of, it was Lando. It felt like Lando. It sounded like Lando. They did a great job of keeping that true character there.
I still feel like, and don't get me wrong, I'm happy that Lando was back. That was incredibly fun. It was pretty much the worst kept secret in Rebels because Billy Dee had mentioned this, a year ago, I believe. Star Wars Weekends. I feel like they could have easily put another character in this episode. Let's say it was Visago instead of Lando Calrissian. Or let's say it was Han Solo. I mean, well, actually, that's probably not a good one to put in there because Han Solo opens up a whole other world of possibilities. But did this need to be Lando Calrissian and have it be the same story?
I think so. I'm not sure you can use any of the big three anywhere. And obviously, Luke and Leia are too young, but Han would be the other possible choice. This was a episode that really didn't drive the overall story anywhere. I mean, it said a lot about the team, but it was a nice, I guess, diversion from the path to the Jedi, you know, from Ezra's development and Kanan's relationship with Ezra.
Sure.
And so Lando works really well in that regard. But Visago is just too slimy a character to work in this episode. Yes.
Well said. Well said. I guess what I'm trying to say is, couldn't they have just invented a different character? Why does it have to be Lando?
Well, I think too it's the weight of his character. Like I said earlier, as far as he carried the show a little bit. If it was somebody new that we'd never met, we might have been off put a little bit. Like, who's this guy? You know, how does he interact? And Lando was a natural fit. We didn't have to be like, oh, this is Lando. We don't have to explain who he is. We just know as Star Wars fans, and think, you know, new fans who watch it can get to know him as a new character and kind of step into that. And then obviously, eventually, when they see the films, or if they have yet to see the films, that they can go, oh yeah, that's the connection I can make. So it's kind of like a springboard to possibly put, you know, new fans into the films, get them introduced to some of these relatively old and new characters. And I think Lando was a nice fit.
An excellent answer. I wish you would co-host a podcast because I really like that.
Well, maybe someday.
Maybe someday if the stars align. Well, that's an interesting approach. I agree. It does set the stage for Lando. Isn't it crazy, guys, to think about? For an entire generation of fans, this is their introduction to Lando Calrissian. Just imagine then if this is your first intro, and then you get to know him in The Empire Strikes Back if you've seen Rebels first, then Lando's betrayal hurts even more.
That's true. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fun. It's interesting. This is, again, opens so many possibilities. Star Wars is multifaceted, multi-generational, and it keeps bringing you back for more. So, guys, I think we've wrapped up fairly well, but any last-minute thoughts or reflections on Idiot's Array?
No, I enjoyed the episode an awful lot. It was a good swashbuckling adventure. I guess every once in a while there is a needed diversion from the overall story. I just kind of wish that, you know, they found a way to include characters like R2-D2 and C-3PO in an episode that would extend the overall story. That, you know, maybe they could have done the same for Lando.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it seemed like it was a little bit of an easy one for them. It was a kind of a soft pitch to the crew, and they're like, "Oh, we'll just hit this one out of the park. We'll have some characters in there, a classic, kind of a classic storyline, and have some fun." But you know, maybe they're gearing up for something big and a three parter or something like that for their upcoming episodes. I think it was nice to have Lando back. It was cool to see him and kind of partake and give those old feelings again.
I think that's really cool. You know what's interesting about this show whenever we get to this question about the last minute thoughts or reflections, I never quite know what I'm going to say. I really don't. Because I don't think about what I'm going to say before I tape a show. We just make notes and we just let the discussion take it where it is. It's a very organic process. But then every time Corey says something, it makes me think about what I want to say. And I don't know why that works, but it's cool.
I'm smooth like Lando.
There you go. I must ask you a question. Sorry, I already did that. I think for me, this is very much, it is a one-off. It's a bit of a departure from some of the heavier themes. But you have to do that in storytelling because it can't all be a certain pace. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to catch your breath. This does lead to some character development because it, again, emphasizes the power of team. It showcases Chopper in a way that besides just being silly or being annoyed with things, he serves a real function and a purpose. He's a bit calm under pressure as well, even though, as Dennis said, he hides behind that fuel cell. Oops, which could have been disastrous, but he recovers. This really is more of a Hera-centered episode than I first expected. And if anything, that salvaged it quite a bit for me. I loved seeing Lando back and hearing Billy Dee's voice. You can't help but smile and wish, man, I wish I talked like him. Just the candor, the cadence of his voice. It's just a wonderful thing to listen to. Everybody was excited. So I enjoyed it. I certainly enjoy the voice. The voice? What's that? I certainly enjoy the Force-centered episodes more, but this was fun. So I'm interested, of course, to see what you both have as an overall grade for the episode. And I'll just go first with this one. I'm going to give it a B-. A B- is not bad in itself. Honestly, if it wasn't for the strength of Hera, this probably would have been a C- for me. Not that it wasn't fun, but when I line up all the episodes throughout the course of the season so far, it'll be towards the bottom and still a lower-centered Rebels episode is still better than 99% of things out there, so there's no question about that. But I'm definitely going to go with a B-. Dennis, what about you?
Well, your grade makes me feel a bit better about mine. I'm going to go with a B. I love Rebels. I've loved this show from the beginning. I'm happier with where it is in its first season than I was with Clone Wars. This was, for all my complaining about how it didn't fit into the overall, or extending the overall story, it was a fun diversion. I thought Lando was great. I agree that it was a great episode for Hera, and nice to also shine a spotlight on Chopper. Again, my problems were just the self-contained story and the scheme didn't make a whole lot of sense to me overall. So I'm happy with it being there.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I'll go with a B- as well. I kind of had that idea in my mind, and through our discussion, it raised it a little bit for me. But I think I'm gonna stay right there at the B- because I do line it up against all the other Rebels episodes and how they just kind of played out for me. It was a fun episode. I enjoyed it. My kids enjoyed it because it was a lot of fun. It was a little more humor to it with the pig and everything. But you know, we get to see our characters again, and Hera's featured and Chopper's featured. So it's nice to see that again and not so much centered on the Jedi theme all the time. So it was a nice little departure. So yeah, just a B-, and look forward to the next episode.
Well, Dennis, it is now time for your five questions here at Coffee with Kenobi, and we very much look forward to your answers. So here we go. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
I would have to say Empire Strikes Back is probably the best, but I have the most nostalgia and sentimental attachment to New Hope. It was the first movie my dad took me to see when I was 3. I fell asleep in his lap. And then back in 97, when there were special editions were re-released, my wife and I happened to get engaged that night when that one came out. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. That's pretty cool.
Very good.
And in this case, attachments is a good thing, I think.
Absolutely.
So, Dennis, your favorite Star Wars character?
If you looked around my office, you'd probably say Darth Vader or R2-D2, but I think I'd have to go with Han Solo. I like the competing motivations he has. He's always desiring to be on his own, not to get involved. But once he extends that olive branch, that branch of friendship, he can't help but be extremely loyal. Saw it at the end of A New Hope when he was anxious to get out of there, out of the temple before the Death Star attacked. And he said, "Oh, Luke, you just want to join us. You're good in a fight." And then, you know, showed up the last second then again on Hoth when Luke was stranded out in the snow, and, you know, he was prepared to brave that and to try and rescue his buddy. So I do like that smuggler type. I kind of think it was the character that the prequels were missing. Hmm. And not that I didn't enjoy them, but I think they kind of those movies needed a character like that, a little more readily identifiable with the average person.
I agree with it. I agree with that. So, Dennis, what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
My favorite dialogue is probably anything that Darth Vader has to say at the end of Empire Strikes Back or the beginning of Return of the Jedi. One that I like a lot quite a bit is, I'm altering the deal. Pray don't alter it any further. Reminds me of a few times when I've been negotiating a resolution to a case or a settlement and things start getting crazy. So that's one I've been using lately.
I would love to see that on a trial. It'd be great. Yeah. If you collect, what's your favorite collectible that you own?
I have a lot of the Lego sets, and of those, I think my favorite is probably the Millennium Falcon. That was a gift from my wife when I graduated from law school a few years ago. So again, some sentimental value attached to that one.
That's very cool. And obviously you have a very cool wife if she's doing that.
Very good.
Oh, she's the best. Yeah. She's a big Star Wars and Star Trek fan.
That's cool. So what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
The one that I've attached to lately is what they've been doing in Rebels with, especially with Ezra. And we've seen in recent episodes how he's really had to, let go of his fears and, forgive, Sibo, to move on to the next step. He's, you know, letting those obstacles that were holding him back, letting go of those, you know, those attachments and moving on. So that's my favorite right now.
Wow. That's a first for Rebels.
Yeah.
For that question.
Cool.
Yeah. That's really
great.
That's
very cool. Well, Dennis, again, thank you so much for being on and sharing a cup of coffee with us. Where can listeners ask you a question if they just want to say hello?
The best place to reach me would be on Twitter. I am at DJKVER2. That's DJK version 2. And I'll be happy to chat with anybody.
Great. Well, thank you again so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi. We look forward to chatting with you in the future.
I appreciate it, guys. It's been fun.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coryc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.